Okay, we are continuing in the middle of chapter 44. We're on page 233, 234. Then we're 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 lines from the top, next to last word, the shikosu. In English, it would be the fourth line, thou art my soul. Okay, we're talking about, right there, thou art my soul. So we're talking about, we have been talking about developing love and fear in various gradations of love and fear of Hashem.
Yes.
And in this chapter, he sort of like culminates the whole deal and says that there is an essential love and fear that a Jew has, and that is based on our life. When we say, well, what's life? Life is Hashem. And we are alive, which means we have Hashem within us. And so therefore, since Hashem is my life, and I love myself, I love my life, I love myself, I therefore love Hashem. How do I love Hashem in this instance is an essential manner. This is one which is sort of much deeper than intellectual, and which is based on a person's ability to conceptualize, or even the higher level of fear and love, which he said in the previous chapters was a gift that Hashem, that was a palpable love and a fear of Hashem. This is something which is much, much deeper. It says, why, this is sort of like, because. Why is it that we love Hashem? Because.
Okay.
Where did I lose you?
No, I want a clarification of terms. You said it's because we're alive. How does that make? How does any other person? How does a non-Jew compare? Because they're also alive.
Well, I guess then they should have a certain monikum of love also based on that. Then.
All right. Okay. Then that's the first time I've ever heard that point.
The Rebbe talks about it actually in the mimer, the last mimer that he handed out.
Yeah.
In the Kisisa Mimer.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He talks about the idea of Mesiras Nefesh and says in self sacrifice.
Right.
And says that where does self sacrifice come from? Self sacrifice comes from, we're talking about a Jew, it comes from our essence. It's the same place. Mm-hmm. It's like how could I do anything against myself?
Right.
If I do this, then I'm no longer able to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't do that, so therefore I'm going to have self-sacrifice. That's sort of like the Jew's self-sacrifice, and it relates to the Yechidah Shebenefesh, the very essence of a Nefesh. Now, it's talking about in Chassidus, that Yechidah Shebenefesh, the very point of our Judaism, is the benefit of being, quote-unquote, the chosen people. Hashem chose to give us that level of connection.
Mm.
Non-Jews don't have that level of connection to Hashem. So you could say, wait a minute, every philosophy has martyrdom. They all have self-sacrifice. Every philosophy has it such that that the highest person is someone who dies for the cause.
Mm.
The martyr.
Mm.
So what's the difference then?
Yeah.
And the answer is because a non-Jew's martyrdom is based on, well, what are they going to get out of it ultimately? In Catholicism, they become saints. In Islam, they get 70 virgins. In Judaism, like everything else, we get nothing. So it's not. And even though you could say, how do you say, I think we've had this discussion before, how do we say martyr in Hebrew? The word is a kadosh. Kadosh means holy. And indeed, it says a person who sacrificed his life for Judaism is reserved the highest places in Gan Eden, higher than Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, this is at the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. So you can say, well, maybe he's martyring himself for that. Says, no, because a Jew, when they're engaged in martyrdom, isn't thinking that.
Yeah,
the only thing they're thinking is I'm not separating myself from Hashem. And again, we're starting four lines from the top, next to last word. This is what it says, my soul longs for you. I also can tell him. meaning, why does my soul long for you? You being capital Y for Hashem, is because...
Do you want to it's not recording. Do you want to record?
Oh, whoops. Yes, please.
Because the... modern gadgets is because you are mipnei sha'ata Hashem nafshi v'chayim amitim, because you Hashem are my soul, my true life. Why do I want Hashem? Is because Hashem is me. So therefore, just as much as I want me, so that's how I want Hashem. L'kachi v'sicha, that's why I long for you. Pir sha'ani misav misava v'tayev l'cha ka'adah misava l'chayim nafshi. I desire Hashem just like a person who desires and lusts for his own life. Like, for example, a person is weak or he's exhausted. You ever get that? I think you mentioned this last week. You get that, like, painful tiredness. You're so tired it hurts. And all you want to do is just go to sleep and wake up not tired. That's the only thing you could think of at that point. I experience that often, actually. So the so he says that's how much a person has this, like it's an innate natural love that they have for Hashem, a longing for Hashem. That's deep within us. What is he desiring? He's desiring that he shouldn't be so exhausted that it hurts. When he goes to sleep, his thought is, I'm going to sleep with the intention that when I wake up, I won't be tired anymore. Sometimes it actually works. That's how much I want to desire for the infiniteness of Hashem. And it's not, he doesn't say Hashem specifically. He says, did I remember though? Every word in the Alter Rebbe, but from the Tanya, is exact. He says he's longing for the infiniteness of Hashem. You have in Parshas Kisisa, last week's Parsha, you have the whole thing with the golden calf, and Moshe is doing some heavy lobbying, and in the middle of this whole bit, Moshe says, you know, God, I never saw you. Here I am, I've been like talking to you for days now, for weeks, months, whatever it is. And, you know, how about, you know, showing up? You know, let's, I want to see you.
Quit hiding behind the curtain.
I want to see you. Who is this? Is this the Wizard of Oz? What is this? Yes, exactly. So Hashem says, no, you can't see me. So Moshe says, try me. Lo yareinu adam v'chai. No one can see me and live. So Moshe still says, "Hareini nas kivaydecha, show me your glory. Show me something more." Listen, we're good buddies. You call me your good buddy, as we see in next week's parsha. Right. Next week's parsha is Vayikra. And Vayikra is a word that he called. Okay, what's the difference between Vayomer, Vayidaber, and Vayikra? Vayikra is like saying, "Hey," that's Vayikra. Who do you say hey to?
Your dearest friends.
Your friends.
Yeah.
You don't say you're in a yeshiva. You don't yell across the room to the Rosh Yeshiva saying, hey, rabbi.
No.
You know, that doesn't work. Yeah. Okay, you say hey to a friend. So Moshe is the object of Hashem going, hey. So you want to call me your friend. You're calling me your buddy, and I never saw you before. So show him yourself to me. So you see, Moshe, halavai, we should have just like a little inkling of what it was that Moshe saw for those 40 days on the mountain that he's complaining that he never saw, that he didn't see anything.
Yeah.
Okay, I should have one moment to be able to endure.
To not see what he
that,
saw?
Yeah, to be able to, yeah. One moment without like totally completely flipping out.
Yeah, yeah.
That he's not satisfied.
Right.
Because, as the Alter Rebbe says right here, what am I talking about? What the Alter Rebbe says, that his soul longs for his Metayev, Misava, or Ein Sof, the infiniteness of Hashem.
Yeah.
Because, in Judaism, it's not, the idea is not to be there. The job is getting there.
Mm.
As long as a person's on that path, going towards, because it says it's impossible, because what are we trying to get to? We're trying to appreciate Hashem's infiniteness. Okay, so today you understood a little bit more. Today you were able to get into the groove a little bit more, which is way good. Okay? Tomorrow you can do more. And the next day you're going to do more than that. Until 120 years, you're going to be doing every day a little bit more. Because you can't get there because it doesn't have an end.
Yeah.
There's no stop point in Judaism where you said, you know that Judaism stuff? I did it. Every day it's like a little bit more, because what is it that he wants to relate to? What is our life? Our life is this piece of infiniteness of Hashem.
Yeah.
We have that infinity contained within us. It was specifically this concept of trying to achieve the infiniteness that got me involved in Yiddishkeit.
Mm.
Don't ask me what was it, and when I was learning about 15 years old, about learning about set theory, that something hit in my head about this idea about infinity. I don't even remember what it was already. It's too long ago.
Mm.
What is that spurred my interest?
Mm.
Okay? But when did I stop at Judaism? I don't know if I told you this story. I was invited to New York for a Pegusha, which is like an encounter weekend to meet Lubavitch. They still have them periodically, a couple times a year.
Yeah.
Then it was, you also got to sit by Efra Brengen, the Rebbe, these things, you know, so it was 1975, we're talking. So Friday night, I'm at a guy's house, and the phone began to ring. And it rang, and it rang, and it rang, and it rang. This is before the invention, never mind cell phones, this is even before the invention of answering machines, 1975. And it's ringing, 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 okay? And I know, I have an uncle who's who's a frum person, and if it's ringing for 20 times, he says, this must be an emergency. He picks up the phone, he answers it. Okay, because if it's an emergency, you're allowed to violate the Shabbos. Okay, so I know that law. So I asked the guy, aren't you going to answer the phone? And he says, ring, ring. He said, no. So maybe it's important. And his response was, maybe it's not. Bingo. I saw this guy in that was copying an entire infinity.
Mm-hmm.
It just hit me right between the eyes with that simple statement. Maybe it's not.
Was your uncle's call important?
Don't know. A couple of times that he picked it up when I happened to be there, it wasn't important. No. So what is it? Ein Sof Baruch Hu Chai HaChayim HaAmitiyim. That this is the Ein Sof, which is the life of true lives. Truth means, we know what truth means, he's defined this a zillion times before, truth means it doesn't stop.
Right, true life.
Okay? L'hamshicho b'kirbo yidei oisek etera. B'hekitza mishinasi b'layla d'araisa kuchy b'ruch hu kol echad. And that, how is it that I'm going to be able to get to do that? Well, I'm really tired now. But why is it that I'm going to sleep? I'm going to sleep. I should be able to wake up in order to serve Hashem with vigor.
Mm-hmm.
One of those lines that of Rema Lipsker, he should live to be well and long years, is to say, if you go to sleep like a horse, you wake up like a horse. Why does a horse go to sleep?
Because he fell asleep.
It's tired.
Because he fell asleep.
That's it. Now, what does a horse do when it's... How does a horse fall asleep? It closes its eyes.
Closes its eye, right.
That's it. It doesn't even lie down.
Right.
All it does is just close its eyes and it goes to sleep. Okay? So if you go to sleep like a horse, and how does a horse wake up? It opens its eyes.
Same way.
And you know what? It's still a horse. So he's to say, you go to sleep like a horse, you're going to wake up like a horse. So he says, my intention in going to sleep is that I should have the strength that whenever it is that I need to wake up. He's talking about the Alter Rebbe was very big about waking up in the middle of the night, and Tikkun Chatzos, and learning all night. That's very well and good. I suppose he used to go to sleep at 8 o'clock, you know, or his Chassidim went to sleep at 8 o'clock because it got dark. You know, who's going to spend money on candles? You know, you go to sleep when it gets dark. You wake up when it's, you know.
No, they had to spend money on candles
somewhere because they got in the middle of the night.
Somewhere in the middle of the night, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, it was the summertime. You're talking they had
moonlight.
Yeah, six hours worth of nighttime in the summertime. But then that means they had 18 hours of night in the wintertime.
It's Russia.
So it worked. It worked all over anyway.
Yeah, it's Russia.
Yeah. That it should be that a person should, in order to serve for, should implore the mercy of Hashem, to wake up in the middle of the night, to occupy himself in service until the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Which is where I think we got up to last week, actually. And there's an even greater love, which is another level of this hidden love. He talked about hidden love, Avamis Soteris, way back in chapter 4 and chapter 18, that we have innate love. It's written into our genetic code. Jewish, love God. Same thing.
Mm.
But you have a greater love, which is hidden in our genetic code. V'gamkein v'chol nefesh mi Yisrael b'Yerushim avaseinu. That this is also an inheritance to us from our forefathers. As he said back in chapter 18, how it is that we inherited and how they bequeathed the love of Hashem to us.
Mm.
As it says in Raya Mehemna, and he quoted this before also in chapter 10, like a child, a son, who pays more attention to his mother and father, has more mercy on them than he does on his own needs.
Mm-hmm.
This is, we all have one Father in heaven. So if it is that a person has this inherent love to put away or put aside their own needs for the needs of their parents...
Mm-hmm.
So Hashem is called Avinu Avarachamin. Hashem is called our merciful Father. Notice the noun there, Father. Our relationship with Hashem is like a son to a father.
Mm-hmm.
If that be the case, then, so just as it is that a child would put aside their own needs for the sake of the father, so we also have this inherent ability of putting aside our own needs for the sake of Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, he who is the person who could possibly even approach to even come to 1/1000th of the level of this love, which we call the love of the Raya Mehemna, of the faithful shepherd, that this is the Moshe the brain that we talked about in the last chapter. So it says that to achieve the level where a person actually feels like a child to Hashem, okay, it's inherent. But it's there, but don't expect to get it so fast. It's not going to plop in your lap so fast. This idea of feeling that Hashem is your father. But nonetheless, just a little bit of a trace, a little schmitschik from Hashem's great good illuminates and shines to the whole general community of Israel in every generation. And he says over there, and there's two interpretations to this, that there is an offshoot of Moshe in every single generation. And this is manifest in two ways. One, the simple way, the simple interpretation of the Zohar, that there's an offshoot of Moshe in every generation, means that there is a leader in the generation who is fulfilling Moshe's function as the go-between the Jewish people and Hashem. Just as it is that Moshe always had to go to Hashem to ask him, well, what do we do now, boss? And that Moshe was always being told, tell the people this. Okay? So therefore you have such a thing also in each and every single generation, you have such a person. Interpretation in the Zohar is that there's an offshoot of Moshe in every generation. He said before in chapter 43, that in each and every one of us there's a bit of a Moshe, yeah. which is this quintessential point of Judaism, which relates to Hashem, which connects to Hashem, which has this love of Hashem. And so in every single person, there is this effulgence of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's on the level that the Tanya explains it. Okay, we have it. Since we have it, so that means it's still within grasp, but a person should be able to achieve a level of even this higher hidden level of Hashem. That he feels that Avinu Avarachamim, that Hashem is our Father, our merciful Father. That he feels like he's a son and he's a...
Yeah, yeah.
So everybody can experience this. This is not that this is something that, oh, I can't do this. This is, you know, but no. This is an innate aspect of every single Jew. This is what how our Moshe is manifest. Okay?
In the father-son equation, that's how it's manifest?
Correct. That's how it could be.
Could be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So we are in the Hebrew, we're still 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom of the page.
But this is different than in chapter 32, where the part of Hashem is in every one of our neshamas. Now we're talking about part of Moshe's.
Yes. So our Moshe is that quintessential point. It's exactly the same thing, it's just putting another level on it. Yes, that quintessential point that gets through, that strips through all of the external trappings so that a person can have love of another person like themselves, is exactly the same point that allows them to relate to Hashem in a limitless way. Because in order to relate to another person like yourself, you have to realize that this person is myself, and if this person is myself, and I'm Hashem, and that person is me, then that person's also Hashem. So you have the Avos Yisrael going on, you have the Avos Hashem going on. Okay, Chassidim once asked the Alter Rebbe, the author, you have Avos Hashem and Avos Yisrael, which is greater? Which one's more important? Which one's greater, which one's more important? So he said Avos Yisrael, and the reason he gave is kind of a strange reason. He says, because when you love another Jew, you're loving what Hashem loves. Since Hashem loves every Jew, so you're loving what Hashem loves, and therefore you're showing that you love Hashem by loving another Jew. Okay? But you can take that, that answer on a deeper level and say that in order to be able to love that other Jew like myself, I have to strip away all the external trappings and relate on an essence, and since my essence is Hashem, so my loving another Jew is loving Hashem.
Yep.
500 to the bottom. Hester Gadol. Such a level of being able to relate to Hashem in such an essential way is generally hidden and concealed greatly in the souls of the average Jew. And he says, even though that's true, he's been flip-flopping back and forth. He says it's very great, not everybody could do this, but he says over here, it's not far away, it's not distant from us. But it's very close in your heart and your mouth to do it.
Right.
It's exactly Moshe's words.
Yes, exactly. Moshe said, yes, so, for a Moshe Rabbeinu, if you're going to tap in and realize that you've got this Moshe, then it's going to be easy for you to do it. You just got to realize, well, this is where my Moshe is. Dahainu, that means to say, we just turn the page. Liyais ragal alashayne v'keilu l'ere kavanas libay umaychay lahamek machshavta b'chayachayim eintzeh baruch hu. That means to say that a person should get used to the idea to arouse this feeling in his heart and brain to focus on Hashem, who he refers to here as the life of life, the infinite one, blessed be he. That Hashem is our true Father, Mamish, and the source of our life.
to arouse for Hashem the love of a father to a son, or a son to a father. So he says a person should work on himself to do this. It's there. And a person has to stop and think, well, why am I here or how am I here? I'm only here because of the graces of Hashem. And since it is that I'm here is the grace of the good graces of Hashem, so Hashem wants me to go do various things and expects me to act like a son. So realizing this, so Hashem expects me to be a son, so I expect Hashem to be a father. Dad, can I have the cars? The car tonight? Yeah. Okay. My allowance is too small, Dad? Anyway.
If you get the keys, let me know.
Yeah.
The key is our animal soul.
Yeah. No. My mother once confided into me, I don't know, a decade or so ago, that when I was a kid, the only reason why she gave me an allowance was so she could take it away.
That's to be like Hashem, then.
Yeah. No, so really? Hashem is not like my mother. No. Hashem did not go to the Mrs. Spinman School of Parenting. I hope not, anyway. Kushiyagal asma came tamid. And when a person gets, he says, a person has to be doing this all the time.
Yeah.
You're cruising across 696. What should you be thinking about? Hey, Dad, thanks. I'm right here with you. That should be occupying a person's thought. Without going into all the Kabbalistic stuff, because you start going into all the Kabbalistic stuff, you're going to, you know, get into this business of, are we here, we're not here, you're going to forget where you are, you're going to conclude maybe the car in front of you doesn't exist as you try plowing through it. It's not a good idea to, you know, like I tell people, don't think about deep Kabbalistic insights when you're driving. Okay. No.
It doesn't exist, but it does for you when you run into it.
Yeah, when you run into it, it's going to, you know, even though you made up the conclusion that it's not there, it's going to hurt. Okay, so no, don't do it when driving. But you could think, you know, where are you, Hashem? I know where you're right here.
You make it, Hashem's giving you the energy and
right now, right here,
and the physical mass.
And he says, when does he say to do this? Kishiyargel atzmai kain tamid. When a person customs himself to do this constantly. What does constantly mean? Constantly means all the time.
Just only always.
Yeah. Just only always. Okay? And he said on the previous page, and this is not hard. This is the easy part.
I'm glad we got that figured out.
Yeah. The hard part, okay, we'll talk about that later. I mean, you know, so we talked about that, some of the hard stuff already.
It is hard. I think it's hard.
This is a person should be thinking about focusing on Hashem. Because when a person pushes himself to do it on a regular basis, that becomes nature. It's not even second nature. It becomes nature.
Yes, it does.
Va'af'im, even though, like, for example, not that I'm patting myself on the back, but it says in Shulchan Aruch, you're supposed to get dressed. How are you supposed to get dressed? You're supposed to put your right sleeve on before your left sleeve. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it just happened. Like, so that's, you know, since I've been 17 years old, I always make sure I put my right sleeve on before my left sleeve. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pants,
socks, shoes, yeah.
Top to bottom.
Put the right one on in first and then the left one.
Yeah.
Okay, I was in a hurry. I grabbed my jacket and I grabbed it with my right hand and I went to put my left sleeve in. I couldn't put my jacket on. I said, wait a minute, that's so weird. Okay, I just like, it was like, felt like I was writing with my left hand. You know, if you're right handed, you write with the other hand.
Yeah.
It feels like really
just
weird.
Can't get there from
it's
there.
Not, so if you, why is that? It's because since I was 17 years old, I always put my right hand in. So I've forgotten how to put my left hand in my left hand in first.
Yeah.
So it just became nature. Did I do anything to it? No. I just, that's from doing it over and over and over and over and over. That's just the way it became.
Habitual.
So if a person is going to be thinking over and over and over and over and over and over and over, hey, Dad, it's great to have you with me. So this then becomes nature. Now, what happens when a person starts doing this, he's going to say to himself, the first thing that's going to enter his mind, because everybody has the Yetzirah, the first thing he's going to say is, who are you fooling?
Yeah.
You're not fooling anybody. You're just saying it. You honestly don't believe that Hashem is your father.
You don't believe that you have this interpersonal relationship with Hashem, like a father to a son, and yet you're going through the road every single day. So he says, even though you might think that, he says, you might just think you're imagining it. Oh, here I am, I'm imagining that I have a father who's Hashem. A famous story involving the Mezitcha Magid, who had a boyhood friend who he went to cheder with. And needless to say, the Mezitcha Magid as a child was probably also a prodigy, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And any kid who had a chavrusa with probably was also quite a diligent scholar.
Yeah.
And as it happened, this chavrusa that he had was pretty much thoroughly knowledgeable in the writings of the Kabbalah. Mm. No slouch, as we would say.
Mm.
Okay, so he's traveling from point A to point B, and he is this chavrusa, this old childhood buddy, hears that the Mezitcha Magid is become a prominent leader. The Cheder Sigmund, it's my buddy from school. I remember him. I'm going to go visit my friend who I haven't seen in, you know, decades.
Mm.
Okay. So he comes and he knocks on the door and he gets invited in, and they have, this is like, you know, they haven't seen each other, the whole thing over there, it's all, you know, and they're sitting and they're talking, and the Mezitcha Magid says, you know, it's getting late, we'll pick this up tomorrow, after davening. We'll catch up. Okay? So this guy, so he davens, he starts davening, he gets up at like 6 o'clock, and he goes to mikveh, and he learns, and he davens with the kavanas of the Rizal, and he's done at 10 o'clock. Which is quite a chunk of change in a person's day. He's a businessman. The Mezitcha Magid comes down at 4 o'clock. So they're sitting eating breakfast, and the Chavrusa says, why is it that you daven until 4 o'clock? He says, well, I was davening with the Kavanas of the Rizal. So the Chavrusa said, I also daven with the Kavanas of the Rizal. And I'm done at 10 o'clock. What are you doing till 4 o'clock? So he says, why are you going to Leipzig? Everybody's always going to Leipzig in these stories, which is where the major wholesale market was.
Mm.
And he says, I'm going to buy goods, and I'll take it, and I'm going to buy the goods, I'll schlep them back to my district, and I'll sell them retail. Okay, so he says, how long does this take? He says, it takes me 3 weeks. And he says, and how often do you do it? He says, I do it 4 or 5 times a year when the roads are passable. Okay, so this is, it sounds like such a schlep, such a waste of time. I got an idea for you. This is Mr. Schumacher talking to the friend. You sit in a chair in your house, a nice comfy chair. Okay, and you should think very carefully. I'm traveling to this spot now, and I reach this spot, and I'm overnight, I'm going to be staying in this at this inn, and I brought with me this book, and this is what I'll be learning in this book. And I'm traveling to this point, at this point, and then finally I get this stuff. I'm at Leipzig, and I go to this stall and to that merchant, and I'm buying this for this much and this for that much, and I'm schlepping it now back into the carts. And it says, if you do it like in such detail, you could do the whole thing in maybe 2-3 hours, and you'll save yourself weeks of time. So he said, there's only one problem. He says, what's that? He says, I didn't actually get there, I don't have the goods. He says, that's the difference between your davening and my davening. He says, you're sitting there and thinking, now I'm doing this kavana of the Rizal, now I'm doing that kavana. He says, I'm actually there, and that takes much more time. Okay, you understand the story?
I just wonder how the Rizal had time to start learning Kabbalah like he did before on.
Oh, he was in a hurry, because he died when he was 36.
Yeah.
So, and he knew he had to get it all out, yes. So.
Wow, it was at 4 o'clock. I imagine a guy that gets, at least the, you know, Hasidim starting at 10 and finishing at
1. But you have to remember, when the Rizal wrote this stuff, he was there when he wrote it. He didn't have to think about it when he davened, because he was there.
Yeah. Right.
The Rizal's feet were too short to hit the ground.
Yeah.
So even though he thinks that this is just some kind of an imagination, that's why he brought it over here. La Yichu, she said, don't worry. Mi'achashu emes la'mitay mitzad atzmai. Because on his level, this is his level of truth. He talked about this before in chapter, I want to say 14. Come on, brain. No, 13. Chapter 13 talks about different levels of truth. Because everybody's different. Everybody's got certain source from where their soul comes from, a certain processing, how much their soul has to go through before it comes into the body, certain things going on with their parents to determine how sensitive their body is. So you have all these factors to determine how spiritually sensitive a person is. And this person, because of his sensitivity, can only reach level A. But this person, because of this his sensitivity, can reach level Z. So if this person can only reach level A, and he's at level A, he just hit Emmaus.
Yes, sir.
That's his level of Emmaus, because that's all that's expected of him. You know, he said before, way back in chapter 29, about a gnat. The gnat here refers to the gnat as the lowest creature. Okay, and a gnat is a gnat 100%. He gets A+ for being a gnat. Because a gnat doesn't un-gnat at any time. Gnats don't do things which are un-gnat-like.
Yes.
Okay, so, because what do you expect from a gnat? This is all a gnat knows how to do. So this person is only holding out level A. So he's expected he should be on level A. And that's his level of truth. Truth means, well, ain't emes elateira, there's no truth except Hashem, it's a Hashem is true. This is how this person is going to relate to Hashem on an essential level. I is only level A. That's all Hashem expects of him. This person who's at level Z, if he's playing around at level Y or X, X and a half, you know, it's not cutting it. You look at this guy and you say, this guy's such a tzaddik, look how he's what he's able to do and how he does it. And he's not doing it 100%. Okay, so Hashem wants the person to be on their own level of emes, to be able only to do what they can do. So he says, don't think it's you're wasting time, or this is pretending, as you're going through these motions of relating to Hashem as a father, because that's how you have to start. You got to start someplace. And it's true that when a person gets to level B, level A is going to look like pretend. But when a person gets to level C, level B is going to look like pretend. Mm. And when a person gets on beyond zebra, so Z is going to look like pretend. Mm. That's just the way it is that the lower level always looks like nothing compared to the higher level. As he brought that back in the end of chapter 13. Viragli achayis keneged kulam. He says, he talks about the sheer kaima brachis, how big is the creation. He gives an not to go into it right here, he's going to talk about this actually later.
At the 500 miles?
500 miles between each world, right. And there are seven worlds. But then he says that the feet of the chayis hakedish is equal to all those seven worlds at the 500 years walk. They're like nothing. And then, the ankle is nothing compared, the foot compared to the ankle is nothing, and the knee compared to the ankle is nothing, and the thigh compared to the knee, or the knee compared to the thigh is nothing, and the thigh compared to the ribs is nothing, and the ribs compared to the head is nothing, and that's just the chayas hakodesh. Then on top of that you have the seraphim. The feet of the seraphim compared to the head of the chayas hakodesh is nothing. So it's true, whatever a person was able to do, you see this in yourself. You want to take a math class. Okay, so you sit down, okay, we're going to start from the beginning. We're going to assume you know nothing. We're starting with 1 plus 1 equals 2. This to you isn't in a math class. Because 1 plus 1 equals 2 is not called learning for you. Right. Back when you were 4 or 5 years old, so 1 plus 1 equals 2, that's, you're learning mathematics. But now it's nothing. Because that's the way we are. As we improve, as we grow, the previous levels, which are the support for how we got to where we're going. Because you can't, believe it or not, you can't learn calculus if you never learned that 1 and 1 is 2. The support that you that you're building on. So this is today. Don't think it's just a daydream. Don't think you're just having an imagination. You're over here. Because this is the level you're on today. Tomorrow, you'll say, you know that yesterday, that was just a daydream. Today, I'm on a higher level. And tomorrow, so today will have been a daydream. Shehu emes l'metzad atzmei, b'vuchinis avim esiteres, rak she'tael es yitziyosa el hagiloi. What's the deal? The deal is that you actually bring it into action. You bring it out. K'dei lehavi elidei maisa, shehu oisa k'teri v'mitzes. It really doesn't help for a person to say, you know, I'm just enraptured with Hashem. I just love Hashem so much, I could just hug myself. I'm so in love with Hashem. Okay, Hashem must have been, we talked before, Hashem must be an Arcasian. You know, if you love me, you'll show me. Arkansas, the show me state, right? Mm-hmm. If you love me, you'll show me. Learn Torah, do mitzvahs.
Is Missouri the show me state?
Pardon? Missouri. Okay, Missouri. Missouri. Yeah,
thank you. I was going to say, no.
What do I
know? No.
The world falls off a cliff after the other side of the Mississippi. I mean, don't tell me. The Missouri's on this side of the Mississippi.
New Yorkers, it's the Hudson.
Right. I used to be that way, but unfortunately now I live on the other side of the abyss known as the Hudson. Anyway. Shalom and mekayim al yedei zek, yedei lasas nachas ruch lefaniv yizbaruk ibeno evilav asaviv. And because now what is he doing is, if you want to love Hashem, you'll show Hashem by working and learning in Torah, doing mitzvahs, that just like a child wants to show off for his father. He wants his father to like him. And more than that, he wants to make his father happy. I'm happy when I can make my father happy. So that's this love that we're talking about. And what does a person have to do? Well, learn Torah and mitzvahs because Hashem wants you to. That doesn't sound very hard, does it? V'alza amru machshava teva kodesh baruch hu mistarefes l'maisa. And about this it says that a good thought Hashem connects to action. Li'ez gadfin l'percha kanal. Which he said this before in chapter 40. That this becomes like the wings. Because what happens, it says, we said in chapter 40 that a person who serves Hashem without love and fear is called an ephraich. A fledgling, a young bird that can't fly. His mitzvahs aren't flying. So what's he supposed to do? He's trying, but he's not. Listen, we're all, in this generation, we have heads like bricks, and he can't sit and meditate to evoke a love and fear of Hashem. So what does he do? Is he goes through this process that he talks about here in chapter 44 and realizes that his relationship with Hashem is like a son, and he's doing it because he wants to please Hashem, and he's doing it, he says, and why does a child want to please Hashem is because of his love that he has for Hashem. So he's showing Hashem that I know I have this thought in mind that I'm doing it because I love Hashem. I love Hashem. Mm-hmm. So on this now, Hashem says, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu ma'atz mistarefes machshava teva l'maisa." Hashem connects a good thought to deed. Mm-hmm. The world interprets that expression when a person thought about doing something good, and they didn't do it. So Hashem says, "Oh, he gets credit for the good thought." The Alter Rebbe is a real hard nose. And doesn't like that interpretation. If you didn't do it, you didn't do it. You had a good thought to do it? No, okay, so you had a good thought. You get credit for the good thought, but you're not going to get credit for doing it. Mm. What does he say is that Hashem connects, the good thought connects to a deed, is if a person is actually going and doing something, knowing that he should be doing it with a fear and love of Hashem, but knowing that he can't revoke that fear and love because he doesn't have the intellectual capacity or the time or the knowledge, the information to evoke that love and fear of Hashem, but he understands that his relationship with Hashem based on his life is like a father to a son, and he's doing it as a child to a father, and he's doing it in order to please Hashem says, A+. I'm connecting all that love stuff by making it like the deed was done with the highest levels of love, and his Torah and his mitzvahs fly. Simple. And I think we should... No, we're going to go down to the two dots. V'hanachas ruach u'kamashal simchas ha'melech sh'mibnei sh'b'ba'a alav b'tzeisim b'beisah sermanal. He gave the answer. He always gives the example of a king with a crown prince and only child, who's been in this case like stuck in prison. And how happy is the father when the son gets out of prison? Here he is. He's being held prisoner. He's held captive, and they're putting through him through all kinds of torturous labor and all kinds of squalid living conditions. And the father feels really bad that his son has to go through all this. And then, when the child is finally released, the father feels a tremendous sense of relief, of gratitude, of love. So Hashem happened to be the one who put us in the prison, by the way. It's his own fault. If he didn't want us in prison, he's crying about the fact that the Jews are in prison, he should take us out of this gullus, and then we wouldn't be so far schmutzed, and we wouldn't be in this arduous, tortuous situation that we find ourselves, and we'd be giving a lot more nachas to Hashem if Hashem would take us out.
We wouldn't be. If he didn't give us that, put us in jail, he would have to destroy us.
No. We'd have Geula, we'd have Mashiach.
We hadn't earned it.
Who says? We've been here a long time.
We've been here a long time, but with the time the Beis Hamikdash was taken, we were...
We've been here a long time, and if Hashem is not happy with us the way we are now, let him take us out of Gullus and see how happy he'll be with us.
Try it.
Okay.
I'm behind you.
There you go.
I thought we hadn't earned it yet.
It's not for me to say. And now to make Hashem a dwelling place down here below. This is the whole thing we're talking about. We're talking about how we started this whole lesson today. With this longing that my soul longs for you. This is very easy. To bring it from the concealed to the revealed. By just putting a little bit of thought and action to it, just by thinking about it, making it so that it becomes natural to you. Okay? Then someone asks you, so who are you? What are you? You can say, I'm a son of Hashem. But, let's say he really does this, he's going through it, and he's saying, you know, I really am a son of Hashem. I have this relationship with Hashem, Hashem is my life. And still, he's not feeling anything. Okay, this is for us real brickhead people. Okay, not only am I taking the easy road, but I'm not even successful at the easy road, but I know I should be successful at the easy road. So he says, but still, he's doing Torah Mitzvahs the right way. He's doing it because Hashem wants him to. Etc. He's doing it because he knows, listen, okay, I should be having a love and fear of Hashem right now. I don't. I really wish I could have one right now. But I'm going to go learn the Torah and do the mitzvahs because Hashem wants me to, because I really love Hashem. And even though I don't feel that I love Hashem, but I really do love Hashem. So Hashem says, okay, fine, good. We'll take that too. So Hashem, bottom line, Hashem is really easy to please. We just have to want to be at some level of wanting to please Hashem. Okay, it's not even that you have to want to please Hashem. You have to want to please Hashem.
There you go.
Even that's enough. Okay, it's not that you're pleasing Hashem. It's not even that you're wanting to please Hashem. You're wanting to want to please Hashem.
I wish I wanted.
Yeah. To be continuing up to the two dots on page 235, 236. To be continued.